Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads Review. In this show, we're kind of taking a delve back into previous conversations, but in a different way. So we're covering the Weaponized podcast, but this time it's with Duncan Trussell. I know we just talked about Duncan, but I thought this was a really great podcast because we're talking about like aliens and we'll get into it. But anyways, hello and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast. In this show, we take great snips from other shows, shine a bit of light, add a bit of context, and always add some humor. We are not affiliated with any of the shows mentioned in the podcast. However, if you are interested in the shows discussed, you can easily find them by going to the link in the podcast. And now to the show.
And the real world is not an idea. It is not words. Reality is...
All right, guys. So if you've clicked on this video, you're either listening to the show, which thank you, by the way. Oh, also, I'm joined by Adam, as always.
Hello. Hey, guys.
Duncan Trussell is just a great human, and it fits so perfectly with the Weaponized podcast. So I guess we'll get into it a little bit.
Duncan is I don't know if he talks or focuses a lot on alien visitation and the type of things that...
Oh, he definitely does.
Yeah, but he's more on like the psychedelic realm of...
The religious side of things, yeah.
Well, something. You know, he's more interested in talking to DMT aliens.
That's true, I think.
Like a different type. Ones that don't have spaceships, but you gotta visit them by using chemicals.
Yeah, I know, right. No, but he's still a big alien dude. I mean, he's very much out there.
Of course.
So this stuff is still very much up his alley.
Yeah.
But, the first thing that we talked about was his show, The Midnight Gospel. What a wonderful show that is, man.
Brilliant.
I love that show so much. And it's kind of a kooky show. Like, I don't imagine a lot of people... Like, he was explaining when he was trying to pitch the show to everyone, he was, like, kind of skeptical about it. But I really think it's so approachable by a bunch of different people. And the animation, man.
Brilliant.
Best part of it.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
Yeah. It's super trippy.
Yeah. And it goes into, like, the whole simulation thing. And there's just such a broad range of topics that they cover in that show. That's just so fun.
Yeah, it's wild. I want to go back and like sit down and really go through it all.
It's great. It's great. If you like ever take too many edibles or something, it's probably a really good show to go back to if you like need some comfort, you know.
It might send you over the edge. Depends what episode.
Yeah, it depends what episode, but I feel like that would be fun.
Isn't there that one episode where everything is like eating each other? That one's a bit much if you've done a lot of edibles, I think.
Some of them are weird.
Yeah.
But then you hear Duncan's voice and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's Duncan Trussell. Bless him. Ah, guy's the best. Well, he did talk about simulation theory a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm.
We get to touch on that a little bit more, which is, I always love this conversation, and I've been kind of talking a lot about it recently just because I feel like I don't really know why. I think a lot of the AI stuff is what's been getting... It's been reigniting the conversation around the simulation theory, how that plays into it.
Yeah, I heard somebody talk once that the statistical probability jumps in a very strange way during the process, thought, and creation of simulation theory. For example, right now, there's no way to prove it. So it ultimately stands at zero, even though there's a possibility. So it's like zero question mark.
Yeah.
However, if we ever make an advanced computer that's so powerful, it could run a simulation of the beginning of a universe to the end in however long it takes, but it's just in this program. It has the processing power for it. All of a sudden, that zero becomes basically 100% question mark likelihood.
Yeah.
Because it's happened once. So therefore, there's no reason to believe that all of them aren't that. All of the universes, ours included, beyond.
Exactly, yeah. And but the interesting thing is, like, even if we, like, if technology continues at the rate that it is, even if it slows down, like, if it just continues to developing, whatever time span it is, if we continue to develop our technology, eventually, unless we decide not to create them, which is a different kind of facet of this,
we will
eventually create simulations that will be entirely, they won't be any different than where we are now.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to stop, right? There really is. This is why when Elon is trying to put the kibosh on the ChatGPT stuff for 7 months or whatever, maybe rightly so. Maybe there's something he's seeing that you know, is like a real problem. We just will not stop creating new technologies.
Yeah.
Nothing is stopping.
It's just too much into who we are. The one thing that I think is interesting in the simulation theory is there's this idea of great filters, right? So through our evolution, there's certain things that we had to be able to create to have consciousness and the ability to create simulations. So we had to be able to develop like RNA. And then also another one is like maybe AI is one. But then there's some of these great filters, or hypothetically, that if we don't live in a simulation, would have a good argument. Like if there were certain great filters that would annihilate our existence. So like some people think nuclear bombs were like this, or maybe AI. Like we create this technology that gets out of hand and then it eventually destroys us. And so we were never able to create simulations because of that thing. And in that case, right, it would be cool because that would prove that we were in base reality, maybe, or not destroying our planet, but through that theory.
Oh, right? Because we got to the point where we didn't wipe ourselves out.
Yeah, like basically for us to be able to create simulations, we need to not destroy ourselves. And so basically the idea of the great filter is there are certain technologies that we come up with or that we discover that have the 100% probability of destroying us.
I mean,
therefore not allowing us to create simulations.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of sounds like, I mean, it makes sense. And it sounds like a way to maybe make us feel better about our own reality. But ultimately, if we can make one simulation ever, we can therefore then make an infinite amount very quickly after that. And some of those would work through their own like stop gaps.
Yeah.
Not all of them would, and that would be okay. It's like, what are we making them for? Just to see how things turn out. It's like some of them might nuke themselves and did nothing. Some of them might get past that. Therefore, they would be the same as us. And as soon as one of them does that, we have to just cancel out our theory that we're the base
reality. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
It's fun, though. And it's so difficult as a problem to kind of work through.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, how does it change anything anyway?
Exactly.
The fear is, it's like, well, that's, you know, some people would say maybe, well, that doesn't include religion or God, or we're just a program that means nothing. And then people would just start running around, I don't know, being wild and wrecking everyone. But not really. I don't think it would change much of anything at all.
Well,
even
it also
if actually was very clear. An alien came and was like, yeah, this simulation and this is what this is. We'd probably make our own new religion out of it.
Well, that's a large argument of like why the simulation in some ways supports the idea of a lot of religions. Like there's this omnipotent power above us that controls us, that created us. It's kind of the same as like someone who made a program. I guess it's just their intention. And if you want to call them a god, but if someone, whoever created our simulation, would essentially be our god in some way.
Right. Right? Of course
or
they
our
would.
Overseer of some way. Yeah.
Yeah. But then we would learn about them and we'd be like, wait, that guy in that dude's like
yeah,
lives
it would give
in his
away,
basement.
It would give it away, I think. Yeah, that's the thing as well. Like another thing that I came to in this podcast was, and they talk about this, is like, you wouldn't really want to know everything, right? Like all the secrets of the universe. If someone gave you the option to know everything or to not know everything, I would say I wouldn't want to know everything because then it would just give everything away. It'd be like if someone came up to you before the end of a movie and was like, hey, do you want to know how the rest of this movie goes? Be like, no, man, I want to enjoy it for myself. Don't give away the mystery of it.
There was a great scene in The Matrix, the first movie, which was so revolutionary for all movies up until that point. I mean, it completely blew basically all of them out of the water with sci-fi. And it was the one where he, I think his name was Cypher, and he's in the restaurant with Mr. Smith. And they've got a deal going, and he's eating what looks like the most incredible steak. I mean, they picked the perfect meal to just, like, have somebody enjoying a moment. And he's just chewing on it and loving it. And he just basically says, ignorance is bliss.
Exactly,
like, that was his reason for going back in there. He goes, I don't want to remember nothing.
Yeah.
Like, nothing.
Yeah, it was kind of shitty because he used it to screw over the other people. But yeah, I mean, if it is a simulation, which I kind of think it is, I still think, like, you know, either you choose to participate or you don't participate. And, you know, if you're going to be here and participate, you might as well enjoy it, right? Might as well make the most of it.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, back to Duncan on this podcast. So one of the first things that I loved was the different questions he was asking ChatGPT. Like, he seems like he's had some time where he's just like probably got stoned and just like sat there and asked all the good questions.
I think he's addicted to it.
I think some people become addicted to it. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly great fun. Like, I asked it the other day. I was like, just ask me a deep question. And then I like, it asked me, like, what's the meaning of life or whatever, and I put, like, in a whatever response. And then it, like, responded to that and then asked me a follow-up question based on what I said. And it, like, held the conversation for, three questions. Yeah, I was like, wow. It's probably way better at doing that with ChatGPT-4, but...
Well, I found that having it ask you questions is the fastest way to learn about it.
Yeah.
Like, I asked it if it would be my personal assistant, and then I asked it to ask me questions so it could learn about what it would need to know in order to help me the best, mostly because I didn't really know how I could use it for that.
Oh, was that what that was for?
Yeah, and it just gave me a bunch of...
It was
super useful.
You know what's hilarious? I opened up the ChatGPT because you had it open, and I was like, I just want to see what he wrote. And I read that, and I was like... Because he wrote, like, what are 10 questions to ask a personal assistant or whatever? And I was like, are you going to ask me these questions? Like, I was, like, reading them, preparing you to ask me them. Like,
no, I just wanted to see what I could do. And it told me all the ways it could communicate with me, remind me of stuff. Like, it seems pretty interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just want to make it clear that I am not your personal assistant.
No.
So.
You'd be useless. I have ChatGPT-4 now.
Yeah, I can't compete with that, honestly.
I wonder what Duncan is really trying to do with it, other than, like, he's fascinated with what this could be. But, you know, is he in there testing limits? Is he trying to find biases like Jordan Peterson? Is he just seeing if it has answers he's never heard before with the type of questions Duncan would ask, which are always just...
Yeah.
They're big questions. They're unanswerable questions a lot of times in a beautiful way.
Yeah. I think he's just fucking around with it, honestly. I
no
mean,
doubt.
Like we all are. I mean, it's so fun to just go in there and just ask dumb questions that you would just... Like, are either too complex to ask a normal person or would just be like, I don't know, you just wouldn't come up in conversation, you know, where you could just put it in there and then it comes up with a thing. And it's also nice to see, like, I like going in there and being like, asking a slightly biased question or a question that's like really open-ended and then just seeing how it responds to that.
Like test
does
it
confirm my biases or does it like offer alternative ways of thinking about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's get back to the pod and, you know, touching on UFOs, the improbability of life existing at all, panspermia, that's always a big thing in UFO folklore.
Yeah.
So panspermia is the idea that basically DNA or life was planted here.
Oh,
so
that's right, yeah.
The discoverers of DNA, and they're the people that figured out the double helix, the measurements, the shape of it. And if you think of what DNA looks like, the spiral thing, nothing really in the cell or the body or anything discovered previously has a shape that looks that looks like a very machine shape, mm-hmm. if you think about it, right? It's very symmetrical in its own right and kind of mathematical, and it's more like a staircase. It doesn't seem to make sense that it would be in a system. So when they had all these measurements of DNA and the nucleotides, they Watson and Crick at Cambridge University did not know what any of it meant. They couldn't make the shape out of it. They had hundreds of different shapes and none of the math added up until they spiraled it,
yeah,
which is wild. But the big takeaway from that was when they looked at it and the probability of how things could randomly come together to make anything even close to that, it kind of worked out that it would take more than the billion years of the Earth or multiple billion years to be created. Oh, yeah. They said it was on the order of like 100 times that, and even then it would be lucky. It was almost like, and Duncan talked about it, but it's like having 100 gambling machines lined up and hitting the jackpot on all of them on one rung. It's like how many times would you have to do that over how many years for anything to line up? And people can do the math on it, and it's too big of a thing. And then there were other events that happened. So it was mostly single cellular life for a lot of the time, like the first 2 billion years or so. Yeah. I don't know. I'm speaking out of turn, but something like that. And then it became multicellular. So there's a big part of the theory of why we don't see other life is because it can't actually – jumping past single cellular is so unusual.
Yeah.
In evolution, that you know, even if life is being created mostly everywhere, let's say that that's fairly common, it's not getting beyond this point. Yeah. To make anything complex.
That's what I was saying earlier about like those great filters, like the probability of all of the things in the specific planet lining up to have the environment to be able to evolve DNA in that double helix thing are extremely rare.
Yeah, that's a huge great filter event, supposedly.
Yeah.
Right? Unless we learn something new.
But were you saying that is a possible argument of how aliens could have intervened into that?
Well, I mean, it kind of brings it up the idea of like, okay, life somewhere else was created. So since it's so unusual over the time span that we have, according to the knowledge that we have, unless we're missing something, which we're always gaining information. So maybe in time we realize, oh no, there are these little points that make this happen, and how it did it on Earth makes sense because we found moons that are younger and they've done the same thing, etc. Right now, we only have one sample group, so it's very difficult.
Yeah.
And mathematically, with what we know, it seems impossible.
We have no idea how rare it is.
Is it that another alien...
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of alien theories that kind of center around the idea of them interfering with us in some way. Like some people think it's like an ancient Egypt helping us build the pyramids, or there was some sort of advanced civilization that at some point came to Earth that changed the way that we live.
Like changed our brains?
Tremendously, yeah.
Yep, get some better help, folks.
So anyways, aliens approaching the Earth. Duncan had a weird theory about AI and like opening up a portal to aliens. And we have a clip that we'll play for you guys.
What if the AI suddenly creates the beacon or the signal or whatever the energetic output that they're super advanced. Radar
level where we can have a conversation.
And so we go on screen all of a sudden, not because of our dumb asses, but because we birthed something much smarter than us, and then they show up. So that's where you could kick around if you want to just for fun thought experiment, play around with the sudden appearance of these UAPs, assuming it's not something to do with the technology that we've developed. They're coming not because of anything we've done, not because they're afraid we're going to wreck the planet, but because China, the United States, that all recently poured billions of dollars into AI, has developed a strong general AI that has somehow sent the peak of his phone home, and they're showing up, baby.
Yeah, that's a. I love the way he explains that. He just has such a great energy about it. But yeah, that's a crazy theory. I mean, maybe.
I mean, it could be as shocking as nukes going off.
Yeah.
I mean, nukes you can see from all over the galaxy if you have the right equipment. Like, it really shows up. It's more than just finding electricity for the first time. I mean,
yeah, it's a huge geological event.
Yeah, it's just like a few fires on the planet. It's like, they found fire. We don't really care.
We don't give a shit.
But here we go. They found nukes. Big deal. We're coming there. And whoops, they found the next big thing that can wipe them out. AI.
AI, yeah. Maybe they're trying to help us. You know, maybe they're like, hey, listen, you guys, I don't know. It's kind of a weird theory, but maybe they're just trying to push us along and they interfere when we've gone too far with it.
Mm.
But it's weird to know, like, I feel like our intentions and our motivations in life as humans would be different than the extraterrestrial beings out there. Like, they'd probably be so much more advanced and like have like human discipline and not like, you know, fall into gambling and shit.
Yeah, no doubt.
They wouldn't be as monkey. Like, they would not be as,
for sure,
chimpanzee like.
But here's the thing, right? It's like, if they are super advanced, they got there by one surviving, so and passing information amongst each other. Why wouldn't everyone just share all information? Like, they would come here and figure out some way to communicate with us and be like, okay, we're going to give you kind of as much as your brains can process information that we have and technologies. See how you improve yourself and see if there's stuff to learn other than just observing.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was a, because they always bring it back to like going to the zoo or talking, like humans talking to an ant. We wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
We can't do it. We don't know how. We don't have the language. So we just observe them. We try not to interfere and we make like BBC nature documentaries.
Yeah.
And then that same theory is, well, the aliens look at us the same way. Okay. But they could
it's kind of a dark theory if you think about it, honestly. We're just like some weird experiment. You know?
Basically. Or we're just a thing that exists.
Yeah.
And they're observing because they think they can't communicate with us. But if they're that much more advanced, I mean, we do have language. They could at least learn that.
Yeah.
And like, sure, an ant has language. But ours is like, we've sent probes into space that have, you know, records on gold disc. Made by Carl Sagan that like kind of gives them some explanation. We know math. That's pretty universal of a language.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways that they could communicate with us. What would the downside be of them just being like, okay, this is some information. Like, you're not going to understand it all. We can't give you like, you know.
I think if they tried to interfere, though, we would hate them and we would try and destroy them. So they probably just like take the subtle approach.
Dude, we can't destroy them. If they can even make it here, they would. Yeah, but it would be. So
they would. They, yeah, but they would be like, if we do that, we're not really helping them. You know, if they really, I feel like if they really did want to destroy us, they probably know way more about us than we know about them, and they could just completely wipe us out.
Oh yeah, instantly. We wouldn't have a chance. But if so, but
why not though?
But you were saying they're trying to keep us from blowing ourselves up,
hopefully,
or letting AI take over. Well, aren't there other ways they could come in? And just be like, oh, real quick, this whole money system, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
So let me tell you about this.
They're like, by the way, Biden, yeah, go fuck yourself.
Let's say they look at us as like a four-year-old kid, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like you're not really capable of taking care of yourself, but I can teach you to be five.
Yeah.
Yet we're just stuck at four.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, we
can haven't
teach
got the training
wheels
off yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like they if they could destroy us, they would instantly if they're here, because why would they care? They would just wreck us and take our resources. But since they're not, and they're in like a possibly observing fashion, why wouldn't they just help us with some stuff?
Yeah. I mean,
my point is, if you're listening to this, aliens, because this podcast is going out into the universe, help us out with a couple of things.
Give us some, I don't know, man. What do we need?
Machines that can, like Star Trek, that make food. And
we
can just ask it for whatever.
We really
food
want to
we
get
want.
One for the office. It would be, production values would skyrocket.
Mm.
If we got one.
A few things like that would be useful.
Yeah.
You know?
Those interstellar pizzas sound really nice.
Definitely. Definitely. They talked about the Comedy Store a little bit and how Duncan moved to L.A., ran out of money, got a job.
Joe Rogan.
Well, he got a job at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And I think probably like working security or something. Ended up driving for Mitzi Shaw, which is like an incredible job to have had. What an unbelievable opportunity that is to be with, you know, the queen of comedy in a sense. And and met Rogan through that. And they became friends and supported each other. And ultimately led to him being a comic. And it's one of those things. It's like being a stand-up is very, very difficult. Lots of people wouldn't be able to do it. It's terrifying in its own right and all the rest of it. But so many that did make it, when you look at the path and their trajectory, it was like just being around others that could do it. Being at the Comedy Store definitely helps.
Yeah.
And then spending all of your time there. Now, is that going to guarantee it? Absolutely not.
But it sets you on the right path.
It's, yeah.
Because you're going to learn so much when you spend time there. I mean, even just observing, and if you meet some people, you know, it just opens up your network so much.
Yeah, definitely. And that does seem...
Especially at that era when Duncan was like in there, it was probably like all of the fucking people you need to be around.
No doubt.
The time. Yeah.
It was like mid-90s. I mean, I don't think it was really peaking then. You know, it was kind of on like the lull after the 80s. And when Rogan first got there, it was like lots of nights of not being huge, not selling out, but it was still the place to be. And, you know, just being in that world, it's constantly on your mind. You're constantly getting sets. You're working on this craft all the time.
Seems
making
like
friends that help you
in a way.
Support it. Yeah.
Yeah, it just becomes so encompassing and everything. Yeah.
Such a dream. Man.
Talked about DMT.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I liked... Duncan had a really good way of... he was talking about how... So there's this idea in our evolution that the world that we perceive it at is not its true reality. It's based on our evolution. So we evolved like color sight to be able to detect ripe fruit. And then, like, over millions of years, our evolution has evolved us to see it as it is now, the way we see it. But that's not the true reality. And so he was talking about, in the same way, people see these DMT entities in very, very similar ways. Like, across very many people who do them, they see these similar entities. And he's like, there must be a huge evolutionary aspect of that as well, because you all perceive it the same way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a state we can't exist in very long.
No.
Right? So we can't get used to it. I've never done an N-dimethyltryptamine, but I would imagine from the stories that I've heard that it's so overwhelming that you can't just relax and kind of allow it to be. Right? This is why I was super interested about recently they're doing DMT research in London, where they are using IVs, IV drip, DMT. So they're holding people in that state much longer. I haven't heard back.
Oh, yeah, they were talking about that on the show.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like calmed them down enough, or if it's just so wildly different that we're, because again, the way we've evolved in this plane, time is maybe different. You know, there's a lot going on. Like, you're moving through not rooms necessarily, but you kind of like get fired through all these different scenes while you're on this drug, and then boom, you're back to reality again. It's like, it's too much.
It's like an interference, yeah.
So with practice, maybe you could get better at just like staying in these scenes and interacting with these beings and make sense of it. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't experienced it. I could imagine it's wild. It makes me nervous to think about it.
It is kind of scary. But I think it's interesting, though. Like, people keep reporting the same, they keep seeing the same entities, the same messages, just a lot of the similar stories, which is the interesting part.
Do you think that it's...
Unlike other drugs. Other drugs are, like, if you take mushrooms, it's, like, different for you than it is for me. But
sure,
if we were doing DMT, you know, we'd have a very similar experience, probably.
Yeah, and with mushrooms, a lot of it is like dreamlike.
Yeah.
You know, it's like thinking in dreams or just thinking through a story or scenario rather than even seeing it. You're just like, wow, I just imagined this river and this road and these trees and these things, and it told me this message, and it's more dreamy.
Yeah.
The reports that you hear from N,N-dimethyltryptamine often is like, this seemed like more real than reality.
Well, and you're also connected to something that's not grounded in anything that you have any associations with. Like, it's a completely new, undiscovered thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound, the stories that I've heard don't sound like people describing a dream or saying, oh yeah, it was a lot like many dreams that I've had. It's like, no, this is completely
more
different.
Real than real, yeah.
This is a very different place. I had conversations, or they were trying to tell me something. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced, or beyond what they even thought they could imagine, which is really
crazy.
Strange.
Yeah, it's like it comes from somewhere else, not from your subconscious. Yeah. It comes from a separate third party location, you know.
And clearly it's not addictive. So it can't be that good either.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people would want to go back there a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not really hearing that. Like, people wrecking their lives because they're just constantly trying to get
DMT,
into the DMT.
Dude,
yeah. DMT ruining lives.
Once again, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know. I wish it was more widely available, honestly.
DMT, yeah. I don't even know where you would go about finding that stuff.
Chemistry nerds.
Probably. I think it's not that hard to make, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe that's acid. I don't know.
I think they're both pretty labor intensive anyway. You gotta like suck all this juice out of a root. It takes a while.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, because I knew this chick in college a couple years ago who she was a chemist, and she told me that she made one in like the lab in college. I think it was DMT. She was like, yeah, it's just a blah, 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 and then a distillation or something like that. But she said it was really easy.
Huh.
It was like not enough to have an experience off of, but it was chemically DMT.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
But, you know.
Let's find some sort of...
Got to get some intern, chemist intern up in here.
Mm-hmm. What else we got for this one?
Talked about Buddhism at the end. Duncan explained in his own words what he thought Buddhism was and everything. I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah. I mean, he's been a big proponent. He went to... Didn't he say that he went to work in a... Like,
yeah, he got an internship at a temple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For like a
He's
a
like
long
deep in
time.
There now, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I kind of look at Duncan in that way, same as like Russell Brand. Like, they kind of speak similar languages in their own right. They're both really, really funny. And yeah, but they both are like super into meditation and Buddhism and all of that like traditional way of thinking and stuff. And they both have a very, very good way of explaining it to dumbasses like me who don't understand it.
Have you ever interacted with any Buddhists?
No, I haven't. I would love to, though.
When I lived in Sri Lanka, when I was, I think, 21, I was teaching English there for almost a year. And Buddhism's big in that country, at least close to where we were. We were in the south, like southwest of the country. And we went to a bunch of different temples and, you know, would meditate with, but it, you could just go in, introduce yourself. They liked people coming from the west and kind of giving you a tour and showing you around. And then they would do this like harmonizing om thing. And, you know, they would all meditate and encourage you to do it and explain what. And they never, they were very clear about saying it's not a religion.
Yeah.
They were, yeah. It's like a ideology or like a way of thinking and how to live your life and explain what that meant. And it was fascinating to see kind of how peaceful these people were, how different they lived from and disconnected from, you know, the modern elements of society that at 21 I was like trying to grasp and move towards, like making more money, finding a career, getting a house, getting a nice car, getting a girlfriend or a wife. You know, these things were all really important. I wasn't like on the kid train then or thinking about that, but you know, it just 21's wasn't
a little early.
I mean, yeah, it wasn't a thing. But, you know, there were all these desires that I had that these people didn't desire at all. And they didn't tell me not to want to desire those things either. They were like, yeah, we understand why you would want that. But this is what we've chosen.
Yeah.
And
but it's kind of it's strange because you look at them and you're like, wow, they have like very little things that they actually possess. They're not attached to anything.
They had nothing.
They're so happy. They seem so happy and fulfilled in life. And it kind of makes you envious in a way of like, man, why am I so attached to everything? Like,
it was confusing for that reason.
I'm like, wow, I really don't need that much to be happy, but I choose to think that I do, you know?
It definitely sounds like that's why Duncan leans into that.
Yeah.
Because he's noticed how many things he gets almost addicted to, right? He's talked about World of Warcraft and playing that forever.
Oh, yeah.
And just even some issues with alcoholism and just general addictive behaviors and, you know, how that affects him. And it's this whole thing of like letting go, separating yourself from that. And, you know, it's almost like Buddhism is like the practice of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. But I like it's not expressed as a religion. I think it, in the West, the word religion has a weird connotation around it. And it's like you're forced to do it. It's like a very disciplined act, but it's not really like that at all. Buddhism is more of a, it's just like a choosing to live a certain way, to be happy.
Why do you think we don't see more active Buddhists here?
I think because of McDonald's and all these big corporations.
Food is too delicious?
No, not food. Not food specifically. But we have so many distractions nowadays. And I think as Westerners, most people don't challenge their beliefs in general. And so we never question like, oh, maybe there's other ways of thinking about things.
Things move so fast here.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I think if you really analyze Buddhism and you were just like, what is this? Is this a better way of existing, right? Assuming that maybe not all of them are so devout that they don't choose a mate and have children, but there's just people that are like, they believe in it, but they still have families and the rest of it and find their peace and live comfortably, you know, within whatever means. Yet we're so taught here, or at least in the West. I mean, one, we have the economy that we crush at, whether you like it or not. It's like money is transacting all the time. How do you get it to keep flowing? Consumerism. So we're inundated with like the idea that we need.
Yeah, we got to keep the engine going.
And it just keeps rotating around. And not to say that if Buddhists started popping up in different towns and cities, we would like, you know, squash it down. But it's like a very difficult sell. It's like even the people I knew in LA that were, you know, hippies, but they're living in Santa Monica by the beach. They make good money and they just have these like elements about them that are like, yeah, I've got my beats. I love to meditate.
Yeah.
You know, I take time for myself at the beach. And it's like, yeah, but you're not really displaying a lot of Buddhist behavior. I mean, you got a nice car, you make tons of money, you know, you got a decent house. You're just kind of like living in this like Neverland philosophy of existence. It's like that's almost the best we can be because we still have to interact with this culture. And they just don't fit well. They're like two pieces of a jigsaw that just you can't slot together.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. And the sad part too is like once you – if you are like fully integrated into the system and you try and pull away from it, like you'll get negative feedback from the people around you. I mean, the good people around you, assuming you have good people surrounding you, will always support you. But the people that you just like know, you know, that you're like not tight with or they don't understand you or anything, like people at work or whatever – They're going to push back against that. They're going to be like, what? Dude, you're not going after the bonus this month? Like, what are you, dumb? You know, like...
Well, there's just an element of money and power that's very useful in our world.
That too,
and
yeah.
That's...
It's built into the...
Buddhism is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So you can either keep a bit of it and then adopt some Buddhist principles, but you're still keeping your eye on these two things that are quite difficult to create. Or you move away from it completely, and then we're mostly associating you with, like, homeless people.
Yeah. Which, I mean, some of those people are very happy in their own right. But, yeah, no, it is very hard to kind of integrate the two of those things together in normal life and how to find that balance.
The happiest person
because you see the pressure from everywhere.
Yeah, the happiest person I ever talked to in my life, and I was fascinated by this person, was somebody that lived, well, lived in quotes, on the end of the street that I rented the house at in Sri Lanka, right near Jayala, which was close to the school that I was teaching English at. And what he would do all day, every day, is find books in like piles of trash, or people would give him books. He spoke English. So he knew Sinhalese and English, and he would read these books. So he was like well-read. He knew poetry. He could like just say poetry and would talk about these different books that he found fascinating. But he was homeless, wanted to be, like followed like the Buddhist teachings. He collected plastic water bottles from like these piles of trash, and he would recycle them and get money. And it was just enough money for him to buy like a plate of rice a day.
Oh, wow.
And the weather's always good there, mostly. I mean, they get, like, some monsoons and things, so you got to be a bit careful. But it's warm. You know, you're not going to freeze to death, you know, whatever. And this is his existence. He had nothing. Nothing.
But he was so happy.
And I could talk to him, and every day he was. And I used to question him because I was just a cheeky 20-year-old. I was being respectful somewhat, but I was just like, dude, you can't... Are you seriously happy? Like, you've got to understand where I come from. Like, this is not computing in my brain. But every day I see you, and you're kind, and you're nice. He'd, like, give me some books sometimes. You know? He'd, like, offered to buy me, like, a rice dish one day. And I was like, please, let me get it for you. And I would do it so often, he would often refuse.
Oh, really?
He's like, I'm going to be fine today. I'm going to collect my bottles, and I'll have enough food.
What a great soul.
But just, it was so odd. I still can't make sense of it today. It's like, and it's so long ago. I'm like, how accurately am I remembering this as well? But I don't know if I'll ever be as happy as that. And it's very strange that there's that disconnect. So, yeah. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, I really like this podcast. It was kind of... right up our alley. If you're a fan of Duncan, UFOs. Give it a listen. I thought Jeremy and the other person on the show, I can't remember his name, and Duncan had a great energy, though. They were really fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, they didn't quite go into the for weaponized podcast. It wasn't as like into the files and into the UFO,
but it was still
folklore.
Out there.
But it was good in a different way.
Yeah.
It was nice to have them together, and yeah. So if you like this one, check out their show. Do we know what episode number it was? We probably should know that.
I don't think there was an episode number. It's just called The Midnight Gospel: UFOs, Demonic AI, Simulations, and Spirituality with Duncan Trussell, weaponized with Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp.
Love that. We're going to have all the links to find that podcast in the bio, and we're also putting, you know, Duncan's Instagram and the other people to get a hold of. So,
yeah.
Love it. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Have a good one.